Well, it's two guys talking baseball at Original Joe's. That's Bruce Jenkins and myself. And if you're up in Westlake, Original Joe's at Westlake, you can go in. There's in-house dining. Everything is separate and apart and masks and everything is clean and be careful. But I guess you could sit up at the bar and talk some baseball if you socially distance yourself. So, Bruce Jenkins, how are you?
Doing well. We're out here at, it's not Original Joe's, it's Montero Martha's after my wife. Okay. A good place. We serve right downstairs, which comes in handy.
Very good. All right, I'll tell you, Bruce, you've written a couple of articles this week and, you know, very skeptical of where baseball is going. And let's share that to begin with the audience.
Well, I really don't see a whole lot of reason for optimism with you know, the testing being delayed and teams having to shut down their camps, you know, for a day or two because they don't have their tests. Positive tests are coming in all the time. Aroldis Chapman, great reliever for the Yankees, was the latest today. Buster Posey, probably the most frontline position player, definitely so far, bailing out of the season for family reasons. But you know, it all has to do with the pandemic, really. And then just the sight of guys out there in masks and taking care of all this protocol, and there's not going to be fans, and it just doesn't seem like it ends well. And you know, maybe above all, the horrific spike in cases all over the country. Really, it's a national crisis right now, and all of that adds up to no season for me. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I'd be delighted if they get it in and the cases subside and we get a chance to flatten this thing in the country. But I just have no faith. The country doesn't deserve it, Marty. It doesn't deserve baseball or football or anything right now. It really doesn't.
Well, it's got a lot of ground to cover, let's put it that way. But someone pointed this out and this week to me, and I think it was a good point. And that is, there's nothing normal in the country. As we joke about Montero, you know, Martha's or whatever restaurant you were talking about. But, you know, baseball, at least what we see of it, at the ballpark, the ball hitting the bat, the, you know, warming up, players running the bases. There's no fans, but I'm not sure I can think of anything else in the country that is actually proceeding, quote unquote, normally than baseball is. So maybe they, you know, I think there's some merit in it right now. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're able to work out in their home parks. You know, they haven't traveled anywhere, which is another major concern. But the only thing I can compare it to would be something like NASCAR or the women's pro soccer of all leagues has a tournament in one place that's going on that really amounts to their season for a month, and that's going well. But it doesn't quite measure up to baseball. So, you know, I think I've mentioned this many times. I'm a big-time optimist, always have been in my life, and always think that things are going to work out well. I'm as skeptical as I've ever been about anything right now, but hopefully my voice is just a little too loud, and I'll be proven wrong.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. You know, the bubble they've created at home seems like it's fairly stable, although today Chapman, you know, test positive. Who knows where that tracing will take the New York Yankees. But the bubble at home seems like it's somewhat workable. But when you take the bubble on the road, when the show opens in Boston and then gets to Broadway, it's another story. And that's good, for me, that's going to be the issue. So I'm with you. I'd like to be optimistic, and you just hope that baseball can be disciplined enough to get through it. But we'll see. All we can do.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. It's like being in World War II. You got to report from the front every day. And every day is different. What can I tell you?
Yeah,
right, let's talk a little bit of ball. The Giants, of course, Posey opts out, forgetting about the reasons why, and John and Ann and Henry and many people with the Chronicle wrote about it in very positive ways, really. But leaves the Giants without a catcher. One catcher is a magician who, you know, can do card tricks. The other one had 300 or 400 at bats in 2012, and that's it. And they're talking about Russell Martin. I mean, honestly, they're going to have to get a catcher. Don't you agree?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, they have they're probably in better shape for catching prospects maybe than anyone in the bigs, with Joey Bart and Patrick Bailey, who had, you know, coming out of 4 years of college and very well respected, especially on the defensive end. They've got two guys who eventually will be able to handle it. But and I'd like to see them somehow get a taste near the end of the season, just to get a look at them. But you know, you really don't rush those guys in. All of a sudden, you're going to play double-A ball to you're playing in the bigs during a pandemic, and that's a bit of a jump. So, yeah, they'll have to get some. Well, I know Farhan will get somebody. I mean, he knows how to do this, and he scans the rosters and see what's happening, and we'll see where it goes. I don't know if it's – Russell Martin would be very good, but just to get a veteran in there who has experience handling pitchers, that's kind of what they need.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be different. I'll tell you, Henry Schulman of the Chronicle wrote a big story about the coaching staff and the average age of being 37, the median age 36, and, you know, three or four different workouts per day. And Kapler's got everything scripted. Everyone looks like Babe Ruth or Cy Young or Koufax or Marichal so far. So, well, you know, it's almost like spring training. No one's lost the game, and everyone looks like an MVP. Isn't it funny?
Yeah. Doesn't anyone look like Solly Hemus or
really?
Trip Cromer?
Or Bobby Malkmus or Mel Roach? Or anyone?
Bobby Knopp.
Yeah, anyone like that? You know, Cliff Cook?
Yeah.
You know, give me somebody that looks
like that.
Give me
Spec Schoforcer, you know?
Really? You know, Ted Lepsio, Dick Schofield?
Where are these guys? They got to be somewhere.
Really, everybody looks like an all-star. It's really funny. So that's the beauty of baseball. As I say, in some crazy way, I feel that it's about the only there's nothing else normal in this country right now. If you go on a plane, you go on a train, I don't care where you go, to a restaurant, wherever you go, it's different. But you watch a baseball game, even without fans, at least what's going on between the lines looks like something I've seen before.
Well, yeah, I watched some of the Korean ball that's been on every night at the outset, because that was just about the only thing we had to watch of any kind. And I wasn't captivated by it, but it was very refreshing. It's good ball, good caliber, kind of a high minor league kind of caliber, with a few guys who can play in the bigs and without anyone in the stands. And they were playing a good caliber of game. The game was on TV, and that was good to see. If the U.S. had the kind of handle on a pandemic as they've had in South Korea or Japan, Germany, you know, we'd be well along toward making this work.
Mm, so true. Hey, Raph dug in the archives and came up with one of my interviews with Bob Uecker, and it's really good. I tell you, I'm just so proud of it that I took the time probably 20 years ago to sit down and talk to him about his career. And he wasn't making jokes. He actually, you know, told me his story. But Bob Uecker, Bruce, he's a Ford C. Frick Award winner, of course, as a broadcaster, but one of the special people in baseball, mid-80s now and still going strong.
Yeah, I was in the late, great Don and Charlie's, the Scottsdale restaurant that did so well in spring training one night. And he was at the table, not my table, but the table right next to me. And he was with a bunch of guys, you know, all solid guys. I can't remember who they were. And just talking ball. And it wasn't like he was cracking jokes the whole time. He was really entertaining. He's seen a lot of things. He played 6 years in the bigs. He was never a regular, but he popped a couple homers. he caught some great pitchers. He caught Bob Gibson, for heaven's sake, and he played for the Phillies and the Braves and everything else. And he's really been around. And, you know, when he does start to wants to be funny, he's about as funny as anyone there is, especially in baseball. But you know, he's not a clown.
No.
And he's very informative, and he's extremely well spoken and very, very interesting. And it's great that he's going so well at his age. That's wild.
Yeah, he had his moment against Koufax. He had some period of time where he was like 5-for-6 against Koufax, believe it or not.
Yeah, he's getting Aaron and Covington out, but he can't get friggin' Bob Uecker.
Yeah, can't get Bob. It's like Vita Blue with Mark Belanger. You know, you could never get him out. But so he had his moments anyway. He was a World Series champion with the Cardinals in 64. He was a backup catcher. And part of the interview, which is really fun, and I hope you get to hear it at some point, he talks about catching Lou Burdette and the spitter and when it was coming and how he would know and all that. So it really was a very open, revealing conversation with him. I highly recommend it. It was good.
I want to call that up because he's one of my favorites.
All right. Hey, this is a couple of things. This is All-Star Game Week in baseball history, and you got to go back to 1961. And, you know, the lore of baseball. Little Stu Miller, about 5'8", 140 pounds, is on the mound at Candlestick. And it's late in the afternoon, and, you know, the gust of wind comes up, and he's in his windup, and it just knocks him backwards a little bit, and he ends up balking. And, of course, the story is he's blown off the mound by the wind at Candlestick. And, this is the anniversary of that with Stu Miller.
You'd think he wound up at second base. You know?
I know.
Looking at that game, and Steve Kroener did a nice retrospective in the Chronicle this morning, and, you know, that everyone's focused, and rightly so, when the National League came up in the 10th, they're coming at you with Aaron and Mays and Frank Robinson and Clemente. You know, they're still in the game, or they're just coming into the game. But it was a really weird game. I mean, Before Stu Miller came into the game, Sandy Koufax had been called on to just face one guy. He's like, you know, Javier Lopez. And coming in, he just faced one guy. Roger Maris got a base hit. That puts runners at first and second for Stu Miller. And right off the bat, the wind comes up and he balks. And a run scores, but, you know, Kenny Boyer made two errors in that game, who's a great fielder. He got picked off first by Hoyt Wilhelm. Frank Robinson got hit by Wilhelm, which just probably didn't hurt as much as all the rest of them. And with all the great hitters in the National League, the only home run they hit was by George Altman. So, you know, plus the fact that Stu Miller got the win. I mean, he pitched the 10th inning. A couple guys got on, but he struck out three guys. He struck out Roger Maris to end it in 1961. So not bad.
Wow, what a moment. What a moment. Yeah. So Steve wrote that. I did not see that today. I'm going to go online and look for it.
Yeah.
Very good.
I know it's in print. I may have been online earlier, but yeah.
Oh, good, Steve Kroener. Very good. That was 61, and that was Stu Miller. Danny Murtaugh was the manager because the Pirates won the pennant in 1960, and Mark Simon will be on with us later. He said Murtaugh said that he had to stand sideways on the mound so he wouldn't get knocked off the mound when he talked to his pitcher. So that was that.
They had two All-Star games for a few years back then, which seems really odd, but they did. And Candlestick was a very young ballpark, and the two games that year were in these classic, you know, the classic Fenway and the next great ballpark, Candlestick. You know?
Wow.
Candlestick didn't quite live up to it.
Yeah,
and by the way, do you remember what happened in the All-Star game at Fenway that year?
No, I don't.
It was a 1-1 tie. It started raining in the 9th, and they called it off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Tie game.
Okay. All right.
Anyway.
I remember the two All-Star games, and after a few years, they just didn't want to do it anymore, and that was the end of it. Wow.
Well, I didn't remember that either. Believe me, I was just checking this afternoon.
1967, and this one is at Anaheim. I remember this one, and Tony Perez hit a home run, I think, in the 15th inning off Catfish to win the game 2-1. How about that?
Yeah, I was at that game. I was home from college, from Cal, and we got tickets. And, you know, we're National League guys. We're going out to Anaheim, you know, hostile territory. And we've got Lou Brock, Clemente, Aaron Cepeda. We got Dick Allen. And, you know, Marichal started the game. Mays and Pete Rose were on the bench with Ernie Banks. I mean, we're thinking, man, this is going to be – we couldn't wait for that night. And, you know, it was a great game in its own way. It was 1-1 going into the 15th, but you know, you couldn't have expected the way that thing came down. And you know, the American League, there's an amazing time through the American League too, with, you know, Brooks Robinson and Yaz and Mantle and Killebrew and Oliva and all those guys. So it was all about pitching. Marichal was great. Gibson, Drysdale were great. Seaver. And Richie Allen hit a homer in that game. I did enjoy that a lot.
Mm. Boy, the 60s, the golden era of baseball. Absolutely, right? The best.
I always thought so, yeah.
1989, Rick Rushel pitches to Bo Jackson, and that's one of the that's like the Reggie Jackson home run at Tiger Stadium. Bo Jackson just crushes it to start the game.
Yeah, I was covering that game, and you know, sometimes before a game, you might, for some reason, you might miss the first pitch. You might be in the bathroom, or you're a little late getting the food, or getting some coffee, or whatever. And boy, I was not going to miss one moment of Bo Jackson from what we'd seen leading up to that game from him. You know, he was making these insane catches and throws like you've never seen, hitting 500-foot homers, and we're just like, good Lord. And then he does that, and he hit it a ton. I forget where it wound up. It was just massive. And even then, he got four at-bats that game, which we were all grateful to see, which it's so rare that that happens today. But big Bay Area presence in that game. The 3-4 hitters for the National League were Will Clark and Kevin Mitchell, which is nice.
Wow.
Dave Stewart started for the American League. So
Fabulous. A couple of things about this date in baseball history. The warning track. This is the first time Yankee Stadium they put a warning track, a cinder warning track. Up to that point, you could run into a cement wall. It was no problem.
Yeah. It's so funny when you look back on things. In the old Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, center field was like, you know, it wasn't even in Pennsylvania, I don't think. And they had a batting cage out there.
That's right.
And if you happen to hit one 18 miles, it'll rattle around out there and the guy will find it or whatever. And in Yankee Stadium, you know, the monuments were famous there. And, you know, with Gehrig and Ruth and DiMaggio. And they were in play for many years. They're just out there. You could, you or the ball could get lost out there.
Well, the story was I used to hide a ball behind the monuments. You know,
in case you needed one? Or
Yeah, if you couldn't find the other one, you grabbed the one behind the monument. So that was 1949. But, you know, Pete Reeser, the next Mickey Mantle,
he would
just run into these cement walls with skull fractures and all that, that kind of stuff. You know, I was thinking today, and this is sort of crazy off the wall, but, you know, baseball is so unique. How about Joe DiMaggio marrying Marilyn Monroe? How about that, when you think about it?
Yeah. I mean, we've never seen – have we seen anything like that? I mean, you know, that Tom Brady doesn't even – I can't even remember his wife's name, Giselle or something. You know, it's a great, wonderful, very attractive marriage. But, I mean, this was – when you talk about iconic pairings in life.
Really?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, just remarkable. I mean, what a great thing. You know, it was a great thing for baseball and for Hollywood.
Yeah, it was amazing. I just thought about that. Last thing that I'll mention, actually, we could do this all night, and it's just a pleasure to talk ball with you. We may actually be doing a pregame, believe it or not, in a couple of weeks.
You know, that would be lovely.
We may be doing a pregame Saturday and Sunday. We got one more Saturday show next weekend. But this also marks the passing of Bob Shepard, the great voice of the New York Giants football and, of course, of the Yankees and Yankee Stadium. I got to meet him. He was a special man.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, walking into Yankee Stadium off the subway when you're smelling the pretzels and you can hear the organist, Eddie Layton, and you can hear Bob Shepard's voice. I mean, Bob Shepard once compared Yankee Stadium to, you know, St. Patrick's Cathedral because it was a cathedral to him, and it had a dignity to it, a different sound, a different feel. And I really, and I know you did too, I mean, because he worked games in other, I think he worked them in the Polo Grounds and Ebbets Field at some point. But there was something about Yankee Stadium, and I wasn't a Yankee hater. That helped. If you hate the Yankees, you hate everything, right? But I always admired the Yankee tradition, and Bob Shepard was the kind of guy, you know, the voice of God. If you didn't know who he was, and there's like 10 guys standing in the media lounge, you'd point to him. That's got to be Bob Shepard right there. You know, tall and thin and erudite looking, classy, you know, cordial and just a gentleman. I don't think I ever did meet him. I was probably too nervous to even introduce myself to some guy from San Francisco. But you didn't have to. You go to Yankee Stadium, you feel Bob Shepard, you experience it.
Yeah.
And, wow, very special.
As gracious as can be. I'll tell you just a crazy story. You know, when I first got into this, I guess it was 1996, you know, when I first started this whole broadcasting thing, And I was just doing stuff at a little station in El Cerrito, KECG, and I went to the Golden Gloves boxing tryouts, I guess, in at the Oakland Auditorium or whatever, something down there by Lake Merritt, wherever it was. And there were some broadcasters in there, and I stood there, and this tall man started talking, and I went, my God, that's Bruce McGowan. That's Bruce McGowan. I couldn't believe it. Because, you know, it's like Bob Sher. I've been hearing it for so many years to see the person.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. I said, my God, that's Bruce McGowan.
You pictured him at 5'4", and no.
That's Joe Salvatore.
Yeah, that's true. He'll call you up, and you haven't talked to him in 5 years. He goes, hey, how's it going? You know, instantly who it is.
I know. The voices are sports. They're beautiful. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, look, have a great afternoon and an evening here. And let's see, as I say, every time you write something, it's interesting. It's like getting news from the front. And we'll see what happens over this next week. And who knows? I just don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, well, I made it pretty clear that I'm pretty skeptical, but I'm not going to be pounding that over people's head every day. I'm in a mood now. I mean, just I'd sure like to see it happen, and every little sign that it will is going to be great. And just to get one game in would be nice.
Well, it's up to the country, and it's L.A., it's Phoenix, it's Houston, it's Dallas, it's Miami. You know, it's the country. And that's the story. Baseball may have the best of intentions, and maybe their bubble and their protocols, if everyone is in their routine like baseball people get, maybe they can pull it off to some degree. But it's the rest of the country, as you said when we first started, that's the issue of baseball.
Yeah, and I think Buster Posey was taking a hard look at that when he was sorting out what he was going to do. With the country completely out of control, going the opposite way of flattening the curve, and you're trying to do anything. He's like, what are we doing?
That was the telltale quote.
Yeah.
That was the quote. Boy, just as I'm talking to you, so I did the boxing thing or the Golden Glove tryout, and I interviewed Joe Frazier. How about that?
Oh, my God.
That was one of my first interviews.
Huh?
Right. Down goes Frazier. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I loved Cassius Clay and later Muhammad Ali, and I was big time before him in all of his fights, going all the way back to the beginning. But when Frazier came along, I just loved that guy too. So when the two of them got in the ring, it was hard to remember feeling quite the way we did at that time, because sure, both guys had their detractors, but man, what a magnificent pairing there.
It's when I first met Keith Jackson in Oakland, because he was doing ABC baseball, and I got to interview him, and I said, can you say, whoa, Nelly? And he said, I never said that.
So. Was it going to be a barn burner? Or?
It was fun. Raf is going to look for the Keith Jackson interview, because I said, Keith, you're known for saying, whoa, Nelly. And he looked at me and he said, I never said that. So
maybe Roy Firestone came up with that because it sounded like Keith Jackson and it caught on.
Boy, I'll tell you, Bruce, it's you do enough of that. You've been doing it for 50 years. I've been doing it for about 25 or 26 now. We cover a lot of ground, don't we?
I love it, Marty. I love these Saturday nights. Believe me, even with no ball, I mean, just to talk about the game, even in its fractured state right now, or the way it was, the way it's going to be, it separates itself from really all everything else, and it's a real privilege for me. Believe me, man.
No, I love it. All right, have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks a million.
All right, thanks, Bruce. That is Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Boy, special stuff. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680 104.5, the Sports Leader.